What's up, Tape Traders? It is JD, your host, right here at the Tape Traders Guide to 90s Pro Wrestling. And on today's episode, I've got an interview that started out with just Billy the P and then grew into Billy the P and Cash Flow. The interview was done just off the cuff while we were sitting backstage at a New South show, and Billy the P started telling me about him and Cash as they were driving to the show, going over some old booking sheets from a promotion that they were running. And so I was like, while he started talking to me, I literally like stopped him in his tracks. And I was like, Billy, hold on 1 minute. Let me run and grab my microphone. I ran in there, grabbed my microphone, hooked it up. And then I was like, all right, brother, go ahead and go. Because anytime that Billy or Cash are talking, you know, they've got so many years in the business, and not just years in the business, but the specific years that they were, you know, working for IWA Mid-South and working for Ian Rotten and, you know, traveling throughout Nashville and stuff were pivotal years in my overall fandom, pivotal years in the wrestling business in a whole, you know, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, you know, the growth and expansion of the wrestling bubble, and then 2002, 2003, 2004 as it pops. So, you know, the knowledge that they bring, and then to, you know, they're right here, a part of everything we're doing right now. You know, Cash is doing, you know, big things in OVW, and Billy and Cash, you know, with John Irons, is Cash's King, the tag team, the modern day Road Warriors, modern day Demolition, you know, so they're still doing these badass fucking, you know, great things. And so when he started talking, like I said, I said, hold on, let me grab a microphone. We talked for, you know, 20, 30 minutes. Everyone had to get dressed and ready for the show. So I told Cash and Billy, I was like, you know, we should just do this, you know, every 2 weeks. Fuck. I mean, we're all, every 2 weeks we run a show in Franklin, Kentucky, New South Championship Wrestling. We're all there. We're all a part of it, you know? So why the fuck not? Why not grab the microphone and take 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes or whatever and sit down and bullshit and go over things? So we'll see how this goes. And hopefully we do many, many, many more of these. And hopefully everyone that listens to them today, you know, enjoys what they hear today. And we can just kind of move on and go from there. So, you know, just a couple of things to plug real quick. Facebook, go to WrestleTopia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. WrestleTopia.PivotShare.com for the Pivot Share. And then don't forget about NewSouthWrestlingNetwork.com. Check out NewSouthWrestlingNetwork.com for everything Alliance, from UCW, AWA New South, UPW, stuff from WrestleTopia. There's all different kinds of series that we have in developments, from the Conversation series to this idea that we have to shoot stuff on the road while we're driving to and from towns. Just so many different things happening at NewSouthWrestlingNetwork.com. But hopefully everyone enjoys the episode. So I'm here with Billy the P, and we were just talking about, what was it, the SW?
Southern Wrestling Entertainment.
Southern Wrestling Entertainment.
Now, this was Cash's own promotion, which we started around the end of 2012, I believe, and it ended right at the end of 2014. And this is in Shepherdsville, Kentucky. And, you know, we actually had a booking committee at the time. Cash, myself, and this guy, Dean Gibson, who is kind of helping run the business side of it.
Uh-huh.
But he was also involved in the wrestling side, obviously. But I actually found our old booking, my old notepad from all our booking meetings.
I love that kind of shit.
Yeah, and when we were just looking through it on the way here, and I was saying, you know, the talent that we were using at the time, you know, because we were using the, you know, not only just Cash and myself, but we were using Sarah Logan, we were using Jordan Cage, we were using Shane Mercer, we were, you know, using a lot of
right.
good talent that hadn't really hit the cusp
right.
yet.
Right. Because Sarah Logan, she was dating Madman Pong.
Yeah. That's another thing we were talking about on the way here today.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
yeah, it was. But, you know, I remember Sarah in, what was it? What was the name of that town in Indiana? Clarksville, maybe.
Yeah. That's.
But I remember her being a just a fan, about a 14 or 15 year old fan, dressed all in Juggalo clothes, coming down there, and she was, you know, coming to the, you know, Pondo would let her into the back, of course. You know, after every show, she's there, her hat turned backwards, all her Juggalo shit on. You know, and of course their relationship bonded during, you know, over time.
Right. Yeah,
and, bonded, you know, real well. I mean, Pondo got, you know, Pondo got her into Japan.
Yeah.
You know, to train. So he got her in that dojo. You know, and that's something you're never going to hear acknowledged. But
yeah.
I mean, he had a huge hand in.
I mean, without Pondo, I mean, I don't think that she would be where she's at now.
Absolutely.
Not because of a lack of talent, but he opened the doors
for her.
He opened the doors
for her down in Orlando.
Yeah. I actually just saw him on Saturday.
Did you?
No, 2 weeks ago.
I haven't seen him in a couple of years.
When we went to Fort Wayne.
Oh, how's he doing?
He was there. Him and his new girl, they were actually, their table was right next to our table.
Oh, okay. And, awesome.
He's bigger than when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
But he seems good, man.
Oh,
you
good.
Know? Yeah, yeah. Good. He took pictures with Earl and the whole deal.
Yeah, I miss Pondo. Pondo helped me a whole lot in the early days because he, on the side from IWA, and this is something Ian Rotten was very much against, but Pondo... We went behind his back, and Pondo was getting me booked in Evansville every week.
Who was running Evansville?
Well, it switched hands a couple times. It went from this one guy, I can't remember his name, but he had a lot of bookers. He filtered a lot of bookers through, like, Bill Dundee and Mike Samples and, God, who else? Pondo. But, you know, he went through several different bookers, and so I was getting that extra experience on the side. And, of course, for me to go work in the Coliseum, you know, at the time it was always special because you knew it just had that aura, and you're thinking to yourself, man, Andre the Giant walked through this dressing room, and Hulk Hogan walked through this dressing room, you know, just little mark out moments for me in my early days.
When did you get into wrestling? Like, actually in training and getting into the business?
96.
So when you... Was it always Kentucky, Tennessee?
IWA was, at the time, was exclusively Kentucky.
Is that your first promotion?
Yeah.
IWA
was. I mean, IWA's first show was my first show.
Oh, really?
So I was literally born into the original group.
And in the beginning, it was all Louisville, right?
It was all Louisville at the time.
A month?
And
monthly?
The Kmart building on Dixie Highway.
That's the one I went to. That's the one I went to. And
yeah. Lots of good memories there. Lots of riots.
So how did you get in? Like, I mean, you know.
Through knowing Ian.
From knowing Ian?
Yeah, because I used to go down to the gardens every week, you know, to watch USWA, of course. And, you know, eventually when Ian got fired from ECW, he was coming up because his girlfriend, Patty, lived here in town. So he moved here to be with her. And so he started coming out of the gardens. He was handing out flyers for little spot shows. He was... working on, but you know, that's how I met. I knew Ian about a year probably before, and how it went down is, Ian, Patty, myself, and a friend of ours, Aaron, we all went to see Kiss on the reunion tour at Louisville Gardens. It was the second show of Kiss's reunion tour in '96. I'll never forget it because that's where Ian said, okay, he said, so here's the deal. He said, I'm going to start my own damn promotion, and he said, now, here's what I want to do. Here's what I want to do. Here's going to be some of our current kind of cornerstones of it. And he said, I would like for you to be the heel manager.
And what did you think? I mean,
I grew up on Bobby Heenan and Jimmy Hart. So, I mean, man, I was always a fan. I was a huge fan of Bobby Heenan, especially. So, what am I going to do? Say no? And I left college. I was in U of L at the time.
So, when he comes and tells you this, you're a wrestling fan. I mean, had you had aspirations to get into the business beforehand? Of course.
I mean, always, yeah, growing up. I mean, I started watching Memphis wrestling when I was about 6 years old. Never stopped. So, Memphis, I was born, bred, fed on Memphis.
Uh-huh.
And it still is my Bible.
Right.
That's still the gospel to me is Memphis. But
and so, like, bam, all of a sudden it's yeah. like, we're going to put you on a show. You're going to be an intricate part of this show. Yeah. Like, what were you thinking at the time? I mean, were you worried? Were you scared? Were you nervous? Were you...
Oh, it was a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But, but I was excited mostly.
And how did Ian pitch the concept of IWA? Was it the Southern style ECW? Was it harder than ECW? Was it... You know, what was the idea behind?
I think the initial idea is that it was going to be basically an ECW type product, but it wasn't at that time. It wasn't. I'm going to do over the top shit. I'm going to do a deathmatch. It wasn't. There weren't the over top hardcore ideas at the time necessarily. It was going to be more of a, you know, like I said, kind of a cousin of ECW wrestling, just in the South.
Right.
So that's how IWA Mid South Wrestling was born.
Was Ian bitter at all with ECW and Paul?
Always. Or, yeah. Now I see Cass's face. And he knows. Always. But,
so,
and really, that was part of his drive to do his own promotion. Right. He'd say, I don't need you, Paul. You know, I'll bring the product down here
to Kentucky.
Because at the time he and Axel have been doing the, they've been starting to do the Taipei.
Yeah,
glass matches and barbed wire,
and it was. I mean, it was hardcore here. ECW. I think everyone talks about it like it's hardcore,
right?
But other than a matter of 15, 20 matches or whatever, it wasn't really a hardcore promotion. It was an adult promotion
because we gave it wasn't a blood bit of and everything. Guts.
But IWA Mid South was
yes. The
main events, the Ian matches were far more extreme than what was happening in ECW. Yeah. And then you had the Chris... Kat, go ahead.
I just want to say this. I believe Ian, at that time, was an innovator for that time period because I believe Ian introduced the Four Corners of Pain matches. Mm-hmm. ECW wasn't doing any of those type of matches then. I think those were pulled maybe from Japan, maybe?
Yeah.
But I think over
Carrying
here,
Cactus.
You know, and I think that's what really set him apart from ECW and his whole... flipping the bird off to where he'd come from.
Right.
He wanted to introduce something different. He wanted to go, the term is coined these days is ultra violent. And that's really where he introduced that. And, and that's where Ian Rotten's innovation came from.
Yeah, I mean, it just gradually escalated over time, I guess you could say. Because really, you remember, Cash, in those early days, we gave a little bit of everything because we picked off all the USWA guys while they were still running. We picked off Tommy Rich, Tracy Smothers, Doug Gilbert.
And added that extra element of, the blood and the hardcore matches and all those guys that had been so known for years, you throw them in that different type of match. And then you got a unique draw for that particular
match. It added legitimacy to it.
The show that I went to in Louisville had a Buddy Landell versus Doug Gilbert's dad.
Tommy
Gilbert.
Tommy Gilbert, yeah.
You know, Buddy Landell versus Tommy Gilbert in a straight-up 100% wrestling match that actually brought the house down.
Absolutely.
I mean, it tore it down.
Now,
did you
see the Tommy Gilbert and Dory Funk Jr. match?
No,
from,
I did not.
From IWA.
No.
It was something that hadn't been seen a whole lot.
Oh.
Anywhere.
It was beautiful.
When he brought, yeah.
And they did a 20-minute Broadway. It was a thing of beauty.
Mm-hmm. I remember, so prevalently, trading tapes, like when IWA Mid-South came about, it was one of those things where it's like, they ran a monthly show, so every month you had to look forward to that new tape, I lived in California.
Yeah.
I didn't live anywhere near here. I was a huge Memphis fan, but not from growing up as a Memphis. 100% from tape trading did I learn anything about wrestling.
Right.
And so IWA Mid-South was an important part of that trading cog.
Yeah, I was gonna say this as well. For that time period, that was kind of an introduction too, because were there a lot of fans out there at that time that really pushed the whole tape trading thing? Because, I mean, let's be honest, there for about, before the internet became really prevalent, there for about a 6 to 9 year period, tape trading was a huge, did huge business for indie wrestling all over.
Yeah, honestly.
Because there wasn't really...
From 1992 to 2001, I mean, I from my experience as a tape trader, I believe that we were the strongest base of internet fans completely. Because we spent all of our time doing nothing but looking for indie wrestling. Right. That's weird. Yeah. You could watch WWE and WCW on TV. But the only place you could find wrestling was tape trading. That's it. New Japan, All Japan, FMW, Wing, whatever it was.
All the Japan stuff was coveted.
That more or less was introduced over there. Yeah. And he was really the first one to, you know, kind of plop it down here in a central area of the States, and then it just goes like that, because, I mean, that's more or less where it come from over here.
Let me ask you, so, like, you know, over the years, you know, 97, 98, 99, the people that were involved with IWA Mid-South, I mean, a good 70% of them went off to become very legitimate stars in the world of wrestling.
I'm just going to have to go ahead and correct you on that, because whether this gets me heat or not, I don't believe guys come from IWA to go on to be stars. I believe guys were stars in the making that had come to IWA Mid-South because there was really not very much other game around. And then they took their and plied their trade and ended up on bigger stages.
They got seasoned.
The original guys, Billy, and you know this as well as I do, if you look at the original guys that were in IWA Mid-South, less than 1% went on to a bigger stage.
Less than 1% are still working.
Yes, and less than 1%
are still working. Right, and I guess that's what I was going to ask was, did you guys know that, like, you know, when you're working in an environment where you have these indie guys coming through, they're coming through that loop. You know, they're working all the. There's only so much left after 2001.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many places left.
True.
So IWAMS was one of those places you could kind of roll through into the loop. Right. Did you know that these guys were going to? They were something more so than the average indie guy.
Well, me and Billy, we talk about this quite often. Regardless of if it was then or, you know, even to this day, Billy and I will see somebody out here doing the loops, putting the work in, and we will look at those guys or we will see these guys working and we'll be like, you know what? This guy really belongs on a bigger stage. You know, you can tell that they have what it takes to, you know, whether it be body type, whether it be the way they cut promos, whether it be the way they structure their matches, you know, whether it be just a look in the way people react to them when they come out. But it didn't just, you know, we've been doing that since we started.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk about back then, yeah. You know, I think, you know, Billy and I from back then were probably more along the lines of, you know, I don't really give a fuck about these guys, regardless of were trying to, you know, I mean,
right? You're worried about yourself. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
We were worried about ourselves and what spots we were in, just like everybody. Yeah, you know? Because, I mean, regardless of what people think about wrestling, wrestling is still a competition. It's just not a competition in the traditional sense of wins and losses.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Right.
It's competing for money, for spots, for opportunities, for time, it's a competition to, you want to be ahead of the guy that's ahead of you.
I'm going to be honest, I am so glad to be able to be doing this still with Billy B after 24 years.
It's amazing. It really is.
It really is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Cash and I have been connected to HIP from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Because we both broke in together, trained together.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you know, we bump ideas off each other. We grow together. You know, Billy has no qualms if he sees something that looks stupid to Cash. That really pretty stupid. Or if something looks shitty, you know, I would have no qualms about Billy. We really need to dress you up a little bit better.
We
don't have any qualms about that. Just, you know, just
because we know we're helping each other. We're not doing it to be. You know, sarcastic or anything. We're doing it to help each other grow. I mean, that's what we did.
Yep. Right.
Because really, the young guys are just kind of, you know, obviously we were just fed to the lions, you know, the big guys that came here. You know?
I mean, let's be honest. The way you broke in the business back then as opposed to the way you go to school to be a wrestler these days.
Right.
Back then, just like he said, in a literal sense, you were fed to the lions.
Yeah.
Which means, you come in and they find out just how tough and how bad you want to be a wrestler.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Literally.
You were literally broke in the business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not broke in the business anymore.
Hey, man,
you're,
you paid your dues.
You go to school to get educated into wrestling these days.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, the you paid your dues. That's for damn sure because, I mean, not just wrestling-related stuff, but, I mean, from day one of Ian, I was out there helping promote, helping hang flyers. I was mopping the floor in the arena. I was mopping the bathrooms. I was cleaning the toilets. I was doing everything I could.
Building bleachers.
Cash
walls. Building locker rooms. Building staircases. You know.
Building a frame upstairs.
Yeah. Building a production room to where they run them old school.
Yeah.
It was everything. It had very little. You know, probably 10% to do with your in-ring stuff.
Right. It was no Mr. Miyagi bullshit where it actually turned out to be something.
We got beat up. We bled.
And we took the time out of all that work that we had to do to try and, you know, work on our trade, you know, fly.
Right.
You know, try to look as good as we possibly could inside a wrestling ring as opposed to being number one handyman.
I was Steve Dahl's bitch for, I mean.
I love Steve.
I was his bitch. And I mean, that was the agreement we made. And I drove him everywhere. He was doing real estate at the time. That's what he was doing for a shoot.
I mean, he had a Steve and, for a long time.
He would have to go put signs out in North Nashville, which is.
Did you say
Steve-O?
Steve Dahl. I was like, oh, God.
North Nashville is, you know, the ghetto
of
Nashville, you know? And so he'd always call me up, and I would, you know, run downstairs, and I lived in an apartment, and I'd jump in the car, and he'd be like, you know, we got to go put signs out. I'm like, okay. So he'd drive into North Nashville, and he'd be like, all right, I need you to go put a sign there.
Yeah.
There. And he's like, but I'll sit in the car. I'll make sure you're okay from right here.
Yeah, I mean,
that's great.
I was out with Ian trying to get sponsors. I mean, but you know what? You have no idea how much that helped me because I was learning the business inside and out, and, you know, just as Cash was as well, mm-hmm. and just the other young guys, you know. We were being put through a ringer, but it was a valuable experience at the same time.
The last question I want to ask before you guys get dressed and everything is, so... the first time I ever saw you was probably around 2001, maybe.
Yeah.
Nashville, I never saw anything, you know, outside of IW Mid-South in Kentucky.
Right.
I want to say it was Mike Porter. I want to say that's what I saw you on.
We did a lot of work.
Maybe New South, Farron. Did you guys work for Farron?
No, we didn't. I don't think we worked for the old. We worked for TJ at the old sawmill.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We worked for Mike Porter, and we did a lot of work for Bert.
It was probably either Bert or Mike Porter.
Yeah, that's we were there a lot.
Kind of talk about the process you went through coming into the business, knowing Ian Rotten. Ian Rotten is the person that helped you get into the business. You're working for Ian Rotten, and now you are taking the step into booking yourself outside of Ian Rotten. And in this time period, you know, wrestling is motherfucking hot, 98, 99, 2000, and then takes a giant dump, you know, 2002, 2003. What was it like booking yourself outside of IWA Mid-South?
It was a little difficult for me at first because Ian did not want me working outside of it. He wanted to keep me under.
He didn't want anybody.
Yeah, he didn't want. Yeah,
he didn't want anybody making any money off you.
Exactly.
You know, but on the opposite note, I believe anywhere we tried to, I believe we had instant credibility because of the type
of Michigan,
because of the type of stuff that Billy and I was always involved with. You know. I don't want to say that everybody knew who you were, but everybody, when you know, if a promoter comes up and says, you know, who trained you or who did this, I broke into business at IWA Mid-South, bam, we always got those shots. There was never no, I got to see what you got first or anything like that. So, you know, instant credibility, I think.
Yeah.
You know, now, did we have pushback? Did the management at IWA Mid-South ever specifically go out and give us bookings? No.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that. We had to work for bookings
until they started no-showing them.
We had to work for that.
But, you know, yeah, that is very true.
I used to get my guys bookings until they started no-showing them.
You know, that's when you tell them to fuck off. And that teaches them a really good lesson.
No, but it was tough. You know, but that's where I was telling you earlier, you know, that's where Pondo helped me a lot in the early days, because Pondo was getting me booked in Evansville and Cash, and Roland and all those guys. He was getting us, but he was getting us to work, and, you know, Ian was giving him shit about it. And he said, well, how are these guys supposed to learn if they don't work?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, somewhere else. It's
working once a month is great, but you can't, you can't get it unless you're working, you know.
Different styles, different people.
Yeah,
you know, but, you know, we would take what we could get. You know,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
God bless man Pondo for helping us.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
absolutely, he did. You have a lot of credit here.
All right, well, I'm gonna let you guys get dressed, and we'll do this. We'll do this again.
We'll sit here,
you know, every other fucking Friday. Yeah, we'll just sit back here and bullshit with Cash and Billy.
Absolutely.
Be a whole new show,
That might be a whole new podcast.
Bullshitting with Cash and Billy.
Bullshitting with Cash and Billy.
There you go.
And we love to talk about wrestling.
That's the name of this.
Let's make it happen.
This episode is Bullshitting with Cash and Billy.
Oh, what do you want to name the show? Man, let me think about that. I'll be back with you on that.
Yeah, Cash has good ideas.
He does have good ideas. You know.
If
don't make dollars,
it don't make sense. That, right? Hey, there it is. That's the name.
Cash is king, baby.